Sure. I'm coming from the Bicycle Advisory Committee. I'm taking Sophia's place as liaison to Bicycle Advisory Committee. I represent Ward 5 on the Bike Advisory Committee, and I guess I'm just looking forward to learning what this meeting does, and hopefully I can get up to speed pretty quick.
Great. Really good to have you. All right. Co-chairs, would you like to call the meeting to order?
Yeah, I'd like to move to call the meeting to order.
All right. Let's see. And I guess, Miranda, maybe you can sit in for Marshall as the substitute co-chair. The
No
previous.
problem.
Okay.
So I second that.
Right, great. Zoom reminders that we are camera on, mute on as much as possible, raise your hand to talk. We can't use the chat for substantive comments, and we'll prioritize members before observers when there's just time for discussion and questions. But observers can participate in the conversation throughout. Approve past meeting notes. Did anyone have any comments or correct or any corrections or additions to the notes? All right. So presumably everyone is supportive of the past meeting notes as is. If you want to move to approve the past meeting notes.
Yeah, I move to approve the past meeting notes.
And I second.
Excellent. And now Patrick will review the agenda.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us for our April meeting of the Complete Streets Coordinating Council. You got a pretty full one tonight, and we're going to be doing lots of project reviews. So we're getting a little more into kind of the design review side of the responsibilities of the committee. Not too much coming up from 4:11 this evening. So we're coming back to you this tonight with an update on what's happening with the lane reconfiguration of the road diet on the Fifth Street restriping project. So that project is now advancing. Tucson Water has begun some of their water work, and we're now in the process of developing some of the striping plans. This commission had taken a position on this project previously to support the reconfiguration of the restriping of the roadway. So we wanted to bring that back to you as this piece of the design work has advanced. We will also be presenting and discussing on the Drexel Road Bridge project. And this is one that we wanted to highlight as well because you are the public oversight body of the Drexel Road Bridge as kind of having those oversight responsibilities of the city. And it's also the first time we are trying out the Complete Streets checklist to kind of demonstrate adherence to the street design guide. So we wanted to take a look at that, see how that works for all of you, and get some feedback on that and see if there's any opportunities for improvements or kind of how that's fitting into our entire project flow. Miranda has been working on a pedestrian safety letter, so she'll share that with the committee tonight for discussion and see where the committee wants to take that and if there's action to add. We'll have our standard CSCC hub check-in updates and kind of some of the financials of the committee. So it should be a good one, and I will turn it back to Tony.
Thanks, Patrick. All right, we're going to start with call to the audience. Can you, before I read this off, is there any audience members that would like to speak in this call to the audience period? Ruth?
Can I do a call to the audience? I don't know when else this would work. What I want to say. It's not technically on the agenda, so can I do it during call to the audience?
Oh gosh, you're just throwing a
I
like a
don't
fast.
actually know the answer to
Well,
that.
just let me do it and ask for forgiveness later.
All right,
Okay.
we'll let it ride, Ruth.
Go ahead, Ruth.
Okay, the one thing I wanted to point out is there's been a lot of, I don't know, a lot. There's been a several letters to the editor in the paper regarding potholes. And the city's lack of action regarding street maintenance. Can I request that we either Complete Streets or the Oversight Committee for 411 address this somehow through the letters in the newspaper and fill in the public that there is money being spent. And I mean, I see a lot of road maintenance going on. So that it's being done and how much has been done already with the new 411 money. People seem to have the impression that nothing's taking place and that we're wasting their money. That's my call to the audience. Thank you.
Thank you, Ruth.
So it wasn't agendized. We're not talking about it, but is there a response? Like, Patrick, is this something that we can take up in the co-chairs meeting? Or
we can look at it in future agenda items. We're not able to discuss it tonight.
So we'll just add that to the list of potential future agenda items, Ruth.
Thank you.
All right. So, and it didn't seem like anyone else had raised their hand. Okay. So Fifth Street Lane Reconfiguration Road Diet Project, Tim.
Perfect. Hi, everybody. I'm going to share screen here. Can you all see that?
Yes.
I see it.
Perfect. Okay. Thank you all for having me here today. I'm going to be going over the Fifth Street Road Diet Project. Just as a quick introduction, my name is Tim Ryan. I work for a private consulting firm here locally in Tucson called Kinley Horn. Actually born and raised here in Tucson also. Went to U of A. Been working at Kinley Horn ever since I graduated for about 14 years now. Doing a lot of the Prop 409, 101, a lot of pavement rehab and striping and traffic experience. And really excited to be moving forward on this one. Been putting a lot of effort in. It's been going over a few years now that we've been looking at this. Really excited to see this moving forward here. What's happening? I don't know everyone's background on this exactly, so excuse me as I just start a bit from the beginning, but what we're doing is taking four lanes that are generally out there for the most part, converting it down to a three-lane section. So it'd be one lane in either direction, a two-way left turn lane for the most part, and then bike lanes on either side, a lot of the buffers where possible, which is most of the actual project here. Before I get into the concepts here, the overall construction of this, we actually have a contractor on board right now. This is going in line with the water line replacements that are happening out there and all of the pavement reconstruction. So it'll be brand new pavement everywhere with this. And that's why we're taking the opportunity to restripe the road into a configuration like this. That construction is going to be starting this summer, approximately. The contractor's still figuring out exact schedules. They do a lot of the waterline and pavement, and they'll be striping along the way. Probably be, you know, later this year, winter, maybe early next year, as a general guideline of when they'll be, you know, getting a good chunk of that striping down on the actual pavement there. So as I go into the actual design, these were included in the email sent out for the agenda. So we have 4 miles of roadway restriping out here. This does overlap a few different projects. We are just doing, for the most part, Country Club to Wilmot. There is another project that we won't be discussing today, but there's a walkability portion that overlaps a mile there from Country Club to Albertont. We're looking specifically Country Club to Wilmot. A lot of the goal of this is really continuous bike lanes across all 4 miles. So that's something I'll touch on in a little bit as I get more into the concepts and a few things for you to note. When we're looking at our design guidance, we use the City Street Design Guide for these. On the actual exhibits down at the bottom, it shows the actual city street type, federal highway street type, and then the posted speed limit. There are different criteria for each of those in this city street guideline. for the different lane widths and everything that we use there. And then we also use the City of Tucson, Pima County signing and pavement marking manual to not only make the striping updates, but we actually look at making a few signing updates where we can throughout the corridor where we feel different clarifications are needed to make it as safe as possible for every user out here. There are certain areas, like even at Dodge, I'll zoom into right now, where there currently is some faded pavement markings to say no left turn onto Dodge when you're heading east. Or further highlighting this area, we're doing a bit of a median there with that walkability project, putting in some of those stripes there or the markings there, the legends there. That way, when people are stacked up here, take left onto Dodge, that people don't try to conflict there and go head to head on each other. So we certainly look at any opportunities where possible to increase the safety as we're doing this. The first PDF here is a road diet analysis that was completed. We do use this in our actual design to look at different lane configurations that are needed at different intersections. And we try to fit in right turn lanes where we can at different intersections, mainly because of the volumes and some of this analysis we see here. So I wanted to highlight just a few different areas of this design that are worth noting. There are two areas at first. One is at Arcadia here. It's where the high school there has a lot of traffic backup. So one of the items that we're actually proposing at Fifth and Arcadia, we know from site observations and the traffic data from that report that a lot of the right turning vehicles back up quite a bit here. So we actually made a few modifications here that we're still kind of fleshing out a little bit with funding and everything to make modifications here to get a right turn lane there with a wide enough bike lane. So that way, we're kind of making it as, again, safe as possible for our users out here. So that's one area to note of where those right turns are specifically impacted besides just some of the actual intersections where we can fit in certain right turns, we try to do so. This whole diet is also designed in such a way that the intersections themselves, we try to keep the lanes pretty close to where they are right now. That way, we don't have to change the traffic signals out there because those can be very costly improvements out there. And if there's a way to save that cost, we're definitely doing so here. Or we do some of those modifications just where we need to upgrade some of the sidewalk ramps for ADA accessibility requirements. One of the big things when we first looked at this is, again, that four lanes of bicycle connectivity across the corridor. So, Wilmot, we have some of those lanes here. But when we go over to Country Club, there are no bike lanes. So one of the things we looked at is, okay, we're taking bike lanes all the way to Country Club. What good does it get if someone just goes to Country Club, they're stuck there, had to turn around, or what are they going to do, right? So we looked at where's the next best place to put them, and that's why we have the treat alternatives in here as well. So the thought is, because the pavement rehab, there's only budget to go to Country Club now, is that let's at least try to take the bike lanes all the way to Treat so that way they can get in the Bicycle Boulevard network and be able to use that to get around, whether it's north, south, or east, west, as needed after they get there. So we have two different alternatives for the Treat layout. Realistically, the second one is kind of showing based on past conversations a few years ago of let's just see what fits out here, and it's already kind of been thrown out as an alternative. But I just want to show you guys some of the things that we look at when we're going through those alternatives, just so you get to see our process. So when we look at east of Country Club, we're just going down to one through lane in either direction. So west of Country Club, we wanted to continue that one through lane in either direction. At some point, it needs to open back up to the two lanes. So we just continue those bike lanes west. And then as we get to Treat, that's where now going west, you open up to two lanes. Going east, you actually narrow down to the single lane, and then it opens up to that bike lane. So that's where everybody can get on or off at Treat Avenue there. I mentioned our second alternative, just for process-wise. We looked at an alternative to where, if you did two lanes, although you can fit it east of Country Club with very minimal lanage here, very minimal bike lanes. Not only are they minimal lanes, but going around a curve, it can be really tough with those minimal lanes. If you get a bigger truck, the back wheels can start to veer into the adjacent lane. Or if they're on the outside lane, they could veer into the bike lane. There's that downside of it. But then the visibility around some of these curves and just having the multiple lanes there. I know Brian and Patrick and I originally walked a lot of the site probably about a year and a half ago. And when you get some vehicles zooming by you when you're just walking out here, especially buses, it feels very tight. So we also wanted to provide that single lane alternative. Or when people are walking out here, it keeps the vehicles as far away as possible from people walking where we actually can. But when we look again at that two lane alternative, it's just to show what actually would fit here if we did two lanes, and then we'd taper east of Country Club. Again, this has already kind of been thrown out as an alternative here, but it's just one of those processes that, okay. Here's it for educational purposes. And we just looked into it so people have that answer when they ask, okay, what does it actually look like with four lanes west of the Country Club? Here's what it does look like. So we are going with that first alternative here at Treat, doing a very minor pavement improvement to restripe the road here. And again, we'll continue that 4 miles down to Wilmot. We have these concepts out to review internally at the city, and we're expecting comments back this week. And then we're continuing with the rest of our design process to final up our actual plans for the contractor. So with that, that's kind of a brief overview of our process, some of the design items. I can certainly show certain areas if you'd like. I'll leave those well again in the agenda here for you guys to open up and zoom in and see different areas that we're looking at. I'm curious just if there's any thoughts or questions right now on this.
Thanks, Tim. Questions, comments? Jonathan, then Miranda.
Thanks. So it's the first time I've laid eyes on this, and you guys have obviously spent a lot of time working this through. But the thing I just noticed really quickly, if you want to zoom in back to the pull out at Arcadia, I'm curious about why the bike lane loses the buffer and kind of veers a little bit more into the street. And then the buffer is provided on the south side of the bike lane, as opposed to switching that configuration, if that makes any sense.
Yep, right here. Yeah, I'd say it's mainly alignment purposes looking at it right now, Jonathan. It's really the most it's a balance of cost versus, what can fit in here. The probably the signal constrains us a bit of wanting to widen the road a bit. If we decided to narrow the median at first here on this preliminary concept, because we can get a little bit more room there for the right turn lane. Since we don't have a buffer for this bike, it had them go a little bit straighter here. Could this taper here be moved here instead? It probably could, to be honest, and it's a good thought and comment, and it's for everyone that's new, this is why we go through these different alternative or different review phases so people can make those comments. But it's certainly a good thought and worth exploring here because you could do something like 7 foot buffer, maybe 2 foot buffer on the top there and do that taper there. But that's really why, Jonathan, it's just straight now.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate it.
Miranda.
Thanks. Thanks for going through all of this. It's super interesting, and I'm really excited about this project. Actually, if you go back to where we were, because I had kind of a related, you talked a little bit about the concerns or the sort of challenges about having a left turn lane, but I'm just like looking at this and I'm seeing, the bus pull in and the bike lane continuing, no buffer, and then that right turn. And I feel like I experienced that configuration a lot as a bicyclist, and it feels really vulnerable to be out there. So I was just kind of curious, like, if there are alternatives, if this is kind of like a best practice for dealing with this kind of situation. But I feel like whenever I'm on it, I'm constantly worried that a car is going to get me from behind because they don't see me. And then just with the bus in the mix too, it just seems really tricky.
And just to clarify, when you say a car is going to get you, you're worried like a through vehicle is going to turn into the right turn lane as you're in that buffer?
Yeah, totally.
Yep. Okay, gotcha. So as far as the right turns go, it's a pretty common configuration to have that, we call it skip striping at different intersections. The guides there are to let bicycles and vehicles know that, there is that potential conflict there, signage accordingly also. But there is that comfort factor that you're talking about that is very real. And at a lot of the different intersections, let's see if I could find an example where we could fit an actual buffer at that to try to help with that. So here's one a bit. It's still, you have that conflict here with, vehicles and buses need and vehicles and bicycles needing to mix for a bit as there's that crossing. We do add that green here. We have been doing that now on all the pavement rehab jobs. We started that about 4 years ago to help vehicles see that conflict also, whereas the previous actually general guidelines right now just say to do the white stripe. So the city has gone above and beyond to be able to put those green lines there too. Here's just one where when we have the space, we actually try to add the buffer to create a little bit more of that comfort also. Going to here, the bus adds a huge complication. There certainly could be alternatives to look at it. Some of it just comes down to the different funding sources and sometimes what we're doing with the project. I've seen different jobs, depending on the conflict, sometimes you can put people on an actual pathway and go a little bit outside and curve back around. Sometimes the thought is also just to keep the bikes a little bit close to vehicles. That way, at least they're seen out there too. So it's kind of the thought process on
Thank you.
that. Thanks for the
Jill,
question.
Jill, did you still have your hand up? You got bumped out, it seems like.
Yeah, I had to I had to leave because I think I had a weird connection.
Okay. Did you want to ask a question?
Yeah, tons of static. I'm going to restart.
Okay. Sophia, then Mike.
I'm definitely in favor of the option where at treat, that's when there's the lane change in terms of amounts. It seems like a lot of stress to add on the country club, and I feel like it's in part, responsive to the disappointment around 5th and 6th Street not extending all the way to 4th Ave. So it is a little bit, that's encouraging to see. And then I did have a question about the cost to move signals. We're here always learning about, how much does a mile of sidewalk cost or how much to put in lighting. So, but out of curiosity, love to hear that answer.
Yeah, when you're saying cost, are you talking more generalities? Is like how much does a whole traffic signal cost? Would that cost help for you, or how
No,
much
because
does it?
you had mentioned it would be potentially cost prohibitive to move the signals. You referenced it as a design constraint for maybe making a more optimal intersection. So I was curious what you had that estimated as.
Gotcha. Yeah, thanks for letting me clarify. So at these intersections, so here's one. A lot of them are like this at Crake Rock, but there's Avenon, Crake Rock, Swan. A lot of the major ones are like this, where they actually have medians. The medians are really the first thing we're trying to protect in place. There's quite a few things that we look at when we're going into the intersections, and maybe forgive me if I go into too much detail here, but I'm just going to go into some detail. I'm going to see if I could potentially draw some. But we look at a few different things. I don't know that the signal cost is so prohibitive that it just changed our design. It was more of let's see how this design looks. If we had to change a signal like we are at Arcadia, let's explore doing that. But at certain ones, it kind of happens to work out that the through lanes we're keeping in the same spot because we're keeping the medians in the same spot. So the medians stay, the left turns stay, and the through lane, the one through lane stays the same, although they might get reduced in width. And then that allows for us to add in bike lanes where possible, or add in bike lanes everywhere, but also add in right turn lanes where possible. Cost of whole traffic signals ranges 400 to 500K right now or more. So some of these actual signals and mast arms to put up new ones, sometimes you can just do the actual arm itself. Sometimes you need to do a little bit more, but they can certainly get costly. I think it just happens that we just don't have to necessarily move those. I'm trying to think here. Let me go to Rosemont just for one other example. So Rosemont here, we actually have really, really wide buffers for some of these areas. And what we actually found is here we could fit in two through lanes, just like the old configuration was. And then maybe you could keep the intersection more efficient as far as vehicles go, and then widen going up to it and taper down after it. We found if we did that though, it changed where the lanes were so drastically that not only do you change where the signals are, but if the left turn lanes, say if someone, just throwing it out there, if the configuration was this way, if someone was taking a left from here, And then say someone, say the other left turn lane was here. This is one of the main things we always look at intersections is, do these left turns actually conflict with each other? And there's some intersections, I know like Stone and Wetmore used to be like this, where you really feel like you have to get out of the way of the opposing left turn vehicle to make that left safely. So that's just something we look at. That's another constraint with these intersections that we've checked and vetted out, that is a big reason why we keep the three lefts in the same area. Does that help, Sophia? I know I kind of went into small detail.
So, Sophia, did that help? Okay. We have to take members first. I'm sorry, Mike. We'll come back to you. Luis?
Yeah, thank you. Going back to the intersection on Country Club and Fifth Street, just east of Country Club, where there's like the divergence of traffic going west, and then those that traffic that wants to go north having to take that right. I drive by, walk by here all the time, and I see a lot of like last minute, wanting to make a right there. So I don't know if there's any possibility of like maybe extending some way, blocking off so that there's, you know, not that possibility, like removing that possibility of having cars go into that right lane just for cyclists. I don't know if that's a thing that you consider, but yeah.
There, I'm trying to remember if that specifically has been considered here. I know we looked at it a bit more on the south side here, and drainage happens to always be a big component of these also. And if I remember correctly, I believe there's a decent amount of drainage coming through this area. Not that we couldn't make it some different material, but it is something to consider with how flat it is out here. And then the actual overall, I think a lot of it just comes down to, are we seeing some of those issues in that data right now? What is the data saying with this analysis that we have? Are there those issues there right now, or will they be there in the future? And, you know, can we potentially mitigate for those? It's been explored a little bit at this intersection, but I don't, you know, not necessarily without bike lanes being out there. I haven't seen those conflicts, but it is, and it is again highlighted in that green to really try to emphasize it. The other hope is with it being, you know, the 10-foot lanes and 30 miles an hour and less lanes, only one lane instead of two lanes, that everyone's limited to the speed of the vehicle going in front of them, that a lot of the goal of this is that vehicles should be going slower to more readily react to some of those bikes there too. Does that help, Luis?
Okay, Mike.
Hi, thank you. First of all, I really like this design plan. You know, I saw the earlier, you know, options, and I think having this turn lane is good, having more room for bike lanes. My big concern is around Arcadia, if you want to kind of pull that up. My granddaughter was going to high school over at Rincon. And when I had to pick her up, oh my God, what a mess that can be a couple of times during the day. So the first question I have is, has anyone spoken to TUSD about moving those buses into that staff parking lot, which is just to the west of that intersect of Arcadia, so that buses would not be right on the street, but would move into that area to pick up students. Students then don't have to be near the street, and it gives you an extra amount of space for buffer and safety. So that's number one. Number two was how far is the right lane, turn lane onto Arcadia being extended, or is it being extended at all from what it currently is? And lastly, because this intersection and at Country Club is really one of the more treacherous intersections for bicycles, is there any option to also encourage bikers going west to go off of 6th, either up Arcadia or another street before Arcadia, and hit the 3rd Street corridor, which is extremely safe and is a wonderful corridor for bicycles? So it wouldn't necessarily mean eliminating the bike lane, but, you know, something like congested area, you know, bike path up this way for safety reasons. So those are the three things that I just was thinking about.
That sounds good. Can you just repeat some of the beginning part of that third question? I didn't get all the notes on that to be able to answer that one.
Sure.
Can you just say where you were saying? Because we were talking about Country Club, and then we jumped to 6th, and I just
You know, between Arcadia and between Arcadia and Swan, I didn't mean Country Club. Between Arcadia and Swan is a little bit of a dangerous intersection at times.
Okay.
And is it better to encourage bikes to go up to 3rd Street at that point and cut across, and then they could stay on 3rd Street all the way to 4th Avenue if they wanted, or they could cut back down, you know, at some point if they needed to on a safer street. Okay, that's all.
Cool. Got it. Thanks for the clarification there. Much appreciated. School outreach. We need to do some of that outreach. Now that we have that preliminary plan, we're getting some of those comments. A lot of the thought before really getting this too far out in the public is, let's make sure the city really buys off on the design, is fully united on the design before we start doing too much outreach. Now that we're about to that point, that outreach is needed. Just like you're saying, we do need to talk to some of these stakeholders, especially TUSD here, and you know, show them this plan and look through some of the field observations with them, see how it's working out there, see how we can best help them. We've done that for Lehman Academy out on Golf Links, actually, and it's helped them quite a bit. And I'm hoping we could figure out something here too, because I've certainly driven by, and yes, it is pretty bad out here. And this is one of the bigger areas we've heard complaints on. So some of that outreach needs to happen. As far as right turn lane goes, with there being only one through lane now, the right turn lane can back up quite a bit more without blocking the through traffic here. So even if it's not necessarily striped for it, just like left turn lanes aren't striped all the way back, but left turns can, you know, stack up into those medians, so can the right turn lane here. It'll have much greater distance than it has currently. And then your Swan item. So essentially talking about bike lanes through here, why not push them to third, just use third all the way across? I'll say when I've been at public outreach discussions on the walkability project, almost everybody brings up this project, and the opposers of the road diet say, why not just use third? And there's a valid point in there, and you kind of made the point yourself. And do you do it for a little bit, or do you do it for all of it? I think there's that debate here. I think a lot of it just depends on, you know, what's most comfortable for the biker. Maybe some of the more advanced bicyclists would like to use fifth and keep going down, whereas maybe some of the other ones prefer the lower stress environment of third, and this gives them options. So I think that's kind of the thought on the overall design right now, Mike.
Thanks, Tim.
Does that answer your questions?
Ariel.
Thank you. Really excited about and supportive of the whole plan. I did have a question about connectivity for bicyclists once Fifth Ed ends at Wilmot. Where do the bicyclists go?
Mm-hmm. Off the road names here. So we're looking at Wilmot north south here, Fifth Street on the west. So there just are those actual lanes here on Wilmot for them to pick up on. And again, as opposed to country club, you know, they at least have something here. Country club, they don't have anything, which was a real concern, but they do have something here to connect to different bike lanes across the park. Or as Mike suggested, you know, you can hop on to third at some point. Does that help?
It does, yes. Yeah, I was thinking of it in the context of that the plan to extend the road diet to Treat, in part, the justification for it was to provide connectivity to, you know, other bike thoroughfares. So was curious about, you know, if that the same thought process had occurred kind of on the other end of town. I think as a non-cyclist, I have to confess, but as an avid pedestrian, this intersection's not great. So I don't know if it's somehow magically better for bicyclists. So I was just curious about, that, you know, if we're having a lot more bicycle traffic going along Fifth, if they're gonna, you know, end up in a less than ideal spot where the project ends, but that may be also out of scope for this project.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Mike. Go ahead, Tim.
It is where our paving limits stop on this project right now. It does tie into the bike lanes right there. And really, it's just because Fifth Street, for those that might not be aware, Fifth Street just ends right there as well. So that's the big reason for that. And they would just pick up on those lanes. One of the things we looked at through design, we actually had just updated this in the past few months, is we actually had two through lanes on Fifth Street going west and then tapering down to one just a little bit further west here. One of the things we more so recently updated is, you know, let's just get them into that single lane at first here, whether it's left turning or right turning vehicles. No, they're going to have to watch out for each other as they're turning. And it happens on certain roads, but we're trying to make certain safety improvements like that where we can.
That's helpful. Thank you.
Jonathan.
No, everyone's been waiting. So,
well, we have to take members first.
Oh, okay. All right. I'll be quick. I'll be quick, Evan. So again, my Tim, just, you know, first eyes on this. Go back to the screen you just had, the focus intersection, Fifth Street. Wilmot, sorry.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So zoom out just a tiny bit more and then get rid of the parking lot on the right side of the screen. So because you're losing all bike facilities here at this intersection, I want to propose and suggest that the bicycle lane actually transitions up above onto the curb at the driveway entrance to that property on the corner, mm-hmm. and is signed and striped and, you know, designated as such as a bike facility, you know, a cycle track that cyclists can then get off the road and travel in a safe environment so that they approach the intersection without having to share the road with three different lanes of traffic that are eager to turn.
Yeah, definitely. Great comment. I'll talk to the city traffic about that. I like that, Jonathan. I think we'll explore that, and we certainly do that on some of the different projects. I know there's the habit to try to not, you know, get them on sidewalk all the time, but obviously where there's no bike lanes, you know, it probably makes sense for safety here at this point. So We'll certainly explore that. Thanks for bringing that up.
Great. Thanks.
And Miranda says, great idea, Jonathan. Okay, Evren.
Okay, thanks, you all. So a couple of questions. One is, Sophia had something in the chat about maybe seeing some posts on the bike lanes, but I just wanted to clarify. I think what we're looking at here is buffered bike lanes, not protected. And could you maybe walk the committee through why that decision was made instead of actual protected bike lanes, even if it's flex posts? And then the other question I have is about the lane widths. So I think it's 11 feet across the entire basically corridor. And I think when you were showing the existing lane width at one of the other old plots you shared, I think we were looking at 10-foot lanes. And I know from personal experience on this corridor, like the thing that I feel like keeps drivers on their toes is the narrow lane width. So I'm just a little concerned about, like, while we're doing a road diet, reducing conflicts, which is great. I don't think we're creating a facility that is good for, like, that is suitable for people who are, like, in that interested but concerned category as far as biking goes. But I think there's other benefits, safety benefits that come with the road diet. So that's great. But why are we not keeping the narrower lanes? And wouldn't that also, I don't know, Patrick, feel free to chime in here, but wouldn't that be more in alignment with the design guide as well? The Complete Streets design guide.
Yeah. I can hit on the specific job here, Patrick, if you'd like, or do you want to start?
Yeah, Tim, you can take a first pass.
Sure. At the beginning of the project, even when we have that single lane configuration, your country club, we do have 10-foot lanes because that's just all that fits out there. And it works, but it certainly minimizes. We can start opening up.
Sorry, cut out. Minimizes what? Sorry, cut out.
I think I was just saying we just only have the road width for the 10-foot lanes, and it's just the only room we have here at the beginning of the project near Country Club to fit the 10-foot lanes and 5-foot bike lanes here. We start to open up the roadway whole Fifth Street width. We can start getting a lot more width closer after Guapo, closer to Dodge and everything. And then we go to 11-foot. The reason, so we kind of went back and forth quite a bit, just like we have on a lot of different rehab jobs in the past, of what makes sense for this corridor. And it really came down to the transit usage here and the transit usage defining to, you know, require that 11-foot lanes. I think it's probably still up to a little bit of internal discussion on this project, I would think. But that's just been the preliminary decision and go ahead right now, is because of the transit, the buses being wider and taking up a bit more room.
Patrick?
Yeah, thanks, Tim. Thanks for the question, everyone. The 10-foot lane would be the preferred recommended width in this context in the street design guide, recognizing that there's going to be other kind of demands on the corridor with transit. So it's been an ongoing discussion that we typically have with SunTran as we look at these configurations. And our experience has been they're okay with the narrower lanes when we have that buffer in there, because it does provide functionally a wider space for the buses to operate. But when you start to put physical items into that buffer, like a protected bike lane, and constrain them to specifically 10 feet, is when you start to see more challenges in that back and forth with SunTran. But I'll certainly encourage the committee to make that comment.
But in this case, it's buffered, right? There's no physical protection for the bike lane.
Yeah, there's buffers a good majority of the project.
So am I hearing it right? Sorry, I don't mean to take too much space here, but if SunTran is okay with 10-foot lanes in the case of a buffered bike lane, not an actual physical separation, there could be further discussion about reducing lane widths to 10 feet?
Yeah, I think that's going to be project by project, but we have had that dialogue with Sun Tran on a couple of other projects that are similar kind of collector streets at lower volumes typically, but when they see that 10 feet plus a couple of feet of offset with striping, they're comfortable with the narrower lanes.
Thanks, Patrick. Thanks, Tim.
At some points here, it's a rarity the buffer becomes so wide that we look at a maximum size of buffer also, just so we try not to encourage, if there was, you know, an 8-foot buffer, someone going to try to pass someone over there, use a two-way left turn lane. It's hard to prevent those things, but we do also try to look at maximum buffer size at just a few areas. But like Patrick said, I see this as a bit of a discussion point over the next few weeks here on this job.
Sophia. I'll take my cue to ask the question. So I think that would be great to see that discussion in a visual sense and to understand those sorts of trade-offs of what we're talking about with what SunTran needs, as well as the difference between a lane that is 10 feet wide versus 11 feet width of a buffered and or protected bike lane in the future. Like, I don't know if you're saying let's keep the 11 so that in the future we can put protection on the bike lane. And so seeing the differences between those two would be great.
Okay, so we're almost out of time on this topic. Are there any final questions or comments? Do you want to just wrap up what the next steps are, Tim, timing-wise?
Sure. Yeah, so we're supposed to be getting comments probably this week from the city. We look at and submitting updated designs over the probably next month or so on this job, maybe month to 2 months. And they'll probably just go through two more rounds of iteration that will actually try to finalize a road deck configuration out here.
Oh, and so we have some late commenters. Last minute, 11th hour. Okay, Jonathan, then Miranda.
Thanks. Real quick, Tim, did you guys consider a protected intersection design at all for the Alvernon and maybe Craycroft intersections, being that those are some of the larger intersections that are moving more traffic?
The scope of the project, with it being Prop 101 funded, yeah, we kind of use that. It's the goal has been pavement rehab, right?
Okay.
Fix the roads. Use that opportunity to reconfigure where possible.
Yep. Gotcha.
I think that funding, again, Patrick, I'm trying not to speak out of term, but that funding wouldn't necessarily cover that type of design, although it could be looked into and potentially helpful if it works drainage-wise out here. I do wonder if it works drainage-wise. We are doing certain things, I will say, on the 5th and 6th walkability project, where we looked drainage-wise to narrow the roadway. It allowed for more walkability space while leaving room for the road diet still to happen. So you'll actually see between Country Club and Alvernon, the dashed lines are different than the existing curb, because we look at those opportunities where we could, because that funding allowed it on that job, John.
Thanks.
If I may jump in really quickly. So I just want to reinforce what Tim was mentioning, is this was really one of those opportunistic projects that we often talk about, is that we're doing the repaving. The project is really limited to do that repaving. That's what the scope is. So any physical improvements that take place out of that are going to have to identify another fund source. Because we're doing the repaving, we have an opportunity to do the restriping. So this is kind of a lower cost opportunity for us to integrate a lot of the complete streets concepts without having to totally change the project scope. Getting back to one of Sophia's points, for example, if we wanted to bring in protected bike lanes, I don't know what the physical constraints are, but financially, that would be perhaps an action by the CSCC if they wanted to identify 411 bikeway money for this project. I think we'd have to look at how that would fit in with the project timeline, if it could come in afterward, a whole lot of other constraints, but it's certainly something that would have to be a different funding source.
Miranda?
Thanks. Does the CSCC need to make any kind of formal like motion or say anything about exploring or pushing more for the 10-foot lanes? Like, you know, just sort of like we really should be prioritizing that because that is more in line with our design guide. And if it's just SunTran, like needing to adjust to that. And then I was also curious about design choices that can be made to allow for like future improvements. So like making sure that like if we did decide to pursue funding for more physical things, that it would be compatible with whatever's being planned now.
Who's going to answer? Go ahead, Patrick.
Yeah, I would say I don't think it has to be a formal recommendation or action of the CSCC to make comments regarding the lane widths. We're seeking your comments as members tonight, so that's been captured. If that is a preference, there'll be opportunities after this meeting if you want to submit anything in writing. That said, there's nothing preventing you if you wanted to take a formal action on it. I'm certainly not going to discourage you from doing so. In terms of additional kind of layering other Prop 411 funding in, I think that would be probably a larger discussion with the project team to see what would be feasible, what physical constraints there are, and if it was worth pursuing, and if it would be better, make more sense to pursue kind of outside of this project, because there is a lot of pressure to advance this. We're already in active design with Tucson Water, active construction, but not foreclosing that opportunity, I think, is an excellent point, Miranda. And the nice thing about some of these protected bike lane features is where we have the buffer. It's something we can come back and bring in later because they're modular. But we do have a lot. There's drainage. There's driveways. There's always a lot of challenges when we look at that. Tim, is there anything you wanted to add to that piece of it?
No, you captured it there, Patrick. Thanks.
Thanks, Tim, and thanks all of you for your thoughtful comments and questions.
Yeah, and Tony, just before we hop off this one, I just want to thank the CSCC for really being engaged in this project, and thank you, Tim, for coming to present tonight. Do you have a deadline for when you would want to receive any written comments from committee members?
I would ask if, you know, we're trying to get all the city ones. I think technically the deadline's today. I'm probably expecting a few more. So I'd say by this Friday from the city, but I'd say maybe May 3rd from the committee, if that gives you guys a week and a half, if that's acceptable. It'd be great to get some feedback. And I appreciate it because if you all drive this or see different things, I mean, Mike, you're bringing up great things around the high school. If you guys see certain things at different times of day, we want to capture that in there. So please definitely comment. And I'd love to work through some of those items. So thank you guys very much for your time and going through these. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Tim. And just one final time, I want to emphasize too that the benefits of the road diet really do extend beyond just providing that bike access. They've been demonstrated across the country, going from that 4-to-3-lane configuration, eliminates rear end crashes or reduces, allows that left turn, improves the operation. So it's really a totality of safety improvements. It's going to be a big pedestrian benefit as well, because those lanes are so tight right now, and those lanes are right on the curb, as Tim mentioned, that sometimes when a big vehicle passes, you can feel the side mirrors. So this will offset that and kind of produce, you know, improve all user experiences, not just bicyclists.
On that note, thanks, everyone. Okay, let's move to the next topic, which is Drexel Bridge Project. Patrick, and the purpose is review and comments on the preliminary design of the Drexel Road Bridge.
Well, thank you very much. And I would also like to welcome Ted Buell here from HDR. He has been the prime designer on it. Ted, if you'd like to introduce yourselves before we kick off the presentation.
Yeah, thanks, Patrick. Yeah, as Patrick said, I'm Ted Buell. I work for HDR Engineering. I'm a bridge engineer. Tim, I grew up here in Tucson, and so very excited about this project. It's a really good project for the area. Thank you.
Thanks, all. And I'll have a brief presentation and we'll open up for discussion, kind of like the last item. There's no funding request this time, but we really want to get the feedback of the CSCC, kind of understanding where you're at with the preliminary design on this project. As I've mentioned multiple times, we're still very early in design, so these are really the best opportunities to really evaluate the project, have an influence on the project elements, because we're not, you know, the bulldozers aren't waiting on the corner to move dirt at this point. So we've got some time. And I'll bring up a presentation and we'll step you through and then open it up for discussion. Is you everyone seeing that?
Yep.
Except you're not in presentation mode yet. There.
Am I in presentation? All right. So I'll give you a bit of an overview of the project, a bit of the background, and as I mentioned, we'll answer questions, try to keep this pretty brief. So we're talking about the new Drexel Bridge project, and this is one that's been identified in Move Tucson, has been in our regional plans for a number of years, and it finally had the opportunity to really advance it. The project is located on Drexel Road, about an eighth of a mile west of Interstate 19, near the Tucson Spectrum. And what we're really intending to do with this project is close that final gap over the Cayo Santa Cruz River, or over the Santa Cruz River. I was reading the slide, where we currently have about a 2 mile gap between crossing opportunities on the southwest of the city, an area that's seen pretty extensive growth and continues to see growth and is putting a lot of pressure on Irvington and Valencia roads, and everything is funneling through those corridors. So we can talk a little bit about kind of the philosophy of the project or the intent of this project and how it's going to fit into the neighborhoods, because it's going to operate very differently in the network than Irvington and Valencia do. And that is absolutely by intent. So the project that we're proposing is really a two lane with a center turn lane, new bridge over on the Santa Cruz River, connecting Midvale Park Road to Cayo Santa Cruz. Essentially touching down over the crossing by Mahan Drive and tying into Cayo Santa Cruz. We could talk a little bit more about some of the specifics on that, but that's the broad overview of the structure. The intention here is really to provide a lower stress, lower volume, lower speed alternative to Irvington and Valencia to serve more localized trips, and those trips that are destined to other locations that don't involve a connection to Interstate 19. So what we're seeing right now in the current configuration is that local trips and regional trips are basically mixing on Valencia and Irvington. People who are going into the Spectrum, who are going to making those short distance trips, people who are originating in Midvale Park are having to go onto those two corridors for a short trip, which is then mixing with, you know, peak hour traffic, rush hour traffic that's coming off of I-19. The totality of that is that you've got that mix of local and regional trips that are causing a lot of congestion issues, a lot of conflict issues, safety issues, and neither of those corridors are really providing the, you know, the level of service that we're looking at for bicyclists and pedestrians, active mode users, people who are looking to access the Chuck Huckleberry Loop. So we're proposing this smaller scale bridge that's going to take those local trips off of Irvington and Valencia to have a benefit of congestion reduction, build in greater network density. So there's kind of redundancy in the network, which is always important because if there's accidents, if there are emergency response needs, you want to have that density. So not everything is hitting in the same areas. So that's kind of the connectivity component. We're also designing this to be very comfortable and safe for bicyclists and pedestrians. Again, to provide that lower stress access to commercial destinations, educational destinations, as well as the loop, which is going to be located on both banks of the Santa Cruz in this vicinity. We'll be bringing in some public art into the bridge to improve the aesthetics, to incorporate it within the character of the neighborhood and really make it reflect the area in which it's located. So we're working with the Arts Council right now to start a process where we'll be soliciting local artists to really make sure that we're adding those enhancements to the structure. One of the cool things is that it will also eliminate a major deviation on SunTran. So currently SunTran is going about 5 to 7 minutes out of its way every time it's coming through this area of the city. By adding the Drexel Bridge, we'll be able to close that connection and provide more efficient, reliable service for residents who are using the bus and ultimately save the transit system money by eliminating a deviation that isn't contributing to productivity on the transit system. I'll kind of leave some of those benefits aside for broader discussion, but I want to get a little bit into the project background. So as I mentioned, this project was identified as a high-tier, high-priority project in Move Tucson. So it's it is Tier 1, but it actually predates Move Tucson, and it has been in our regional plan since at least 2003. So this project has a long history. We're just fortunate to really, the stars are kind of aligning in terms of funding and opportunity to advance it right now. It's also located within kind of the high, medium, highest equity focus areas in the city. So it's providing, again, that low stress, low volume, low speed connectivity for residents who are going to be likely more likely to use public transportation, to rely on walking and biking as the primary modes of transportation. It's also very close to Pima Community College Desert Vista campus, which is located right here. The Casas Elitas is just located right here. And then, as I mentioned, the Tucson Spectrum, which is all that commercial development, which is occurring on the southwest of the city. So we have our kind of optimistic project schedule that we've identified. We actually kicked this one off in June of last year. We initiated the project. We've been working with HDR. We've come up with some preliminary designs. We've engaged some, we've already done some community outreach around it. We've been receiving community feedback. We have the project website stood up. Big picture, our ideal timeline is that we'd be looking probably the end of 2025 into 2026, where we'd be starting construction. And that's really going to be dependent on our ability to secure additional funding for the project competitively, which I'll get into in a moment. Where we are right now is we're currently at the design concept stage, where we're essentially at a 15% on the design of the project, which is we have the concepts, we kind of have the layout of the roadway, but we haven't gotten into the real details of the project other than those that are really necessary to support some of the concepts that we've proposed. We started our public-facing efforts for the project in December of last year. So that's where we had our public kickoff meetings. We held two events, one in person and one virtual, to really accommodate all residents and to create a record of the project with the virtual meeting. So we had about 180 attendees at both of those. We had a huge turnout, a lot of energy around the project, a lot of interest, and it was great to see that level of community engagement. All materials were available bilingually, both English and Spanish. We had live translation on the virtual meetings to make sure everyone could be accommodated and had an opportunity to participate in the discussions. So that's kind of a bit of the background of the project. I'm happy to talk more about that, but I want to move through some of what we're talking about tonight, which is some of the initial concepts or designs that we're proposing that we want the CSCC's feedback on about how we're incorporating the Complete Streets concepts into the layout of this structure. So overall, we're looking at about a 550 to 600 foot bridge. I think we've dialed that in a little bit. What's our latest, Ted? Are we at about like 570 feet?
We are at 586 and a half feet.
So. It's been growing on me. So a 586 foot and a half structure. And we're also looking to add improvements or incorporate improvements on the approaches at the nearest major intersection. So the project extent is actually going from Midvale Park Road to Calle Santa Cruz. And I can talk a little bit about some of the concepts that we're proposing incorporating into this. First off, and something we heard a lot about from the community, is we are looking to signalize both of the intersections. Both of these are currently stop controlled, and they do meet warrants for adding traffic signals. So I think that'll be a big upgrade to these corridors and a lot of what we heard community feedback about. Currently, we have a two-lane roadway from Midvale Park to Mahan Drive. We're looking to widen that out to a three-lane roadway because with the increased traffic volumes, we want to continue to provide direct access for the residents on the west side of the bridge. This is the only access point for Ascot Drive, so we want to be able to make sure that residents are able to make that left turn into Ascot and out of Ascot potentially. And then Mahan Drive, we're also going to keep that left turn into. We are proposing continuous 6-foot sidewalks would be offset from the curb, as well as full protected bike lanes on the approach from Midvale Park Road onto the bridge. One of the things that we're proposing that I think is a little unique for some of our bridges, we're also proposing two 12-foot bidirectional shared use paths, one on each side of the bridge. And normally we would probably look to have directional facilities on a bridge, and we'd want to get the continuation of those protected bike lanes. But because there will be connections, and this will be really the lowest stress connection to the loop in this area, we want to be able to facilitate movements in both directions of people who are crossing over at the loop who prefer not to use Valencia or Irvington to do that. And we recognize that people are going to be doing that in both directions because it's going to be more for recreational purposes. Now, the east bank of the loop doesn't currently exist, but this is one of the exciting opportunities of this project, as we are partnering with Pima County Flood Control, and they will actually be reopening the loop on the East Bank, currently north of Drexel Road. It exists, but it's closed and it's not maintained. So Pima County Flood Control is actually taking control of that. They're going to upgrade it, bring it up to their standards for the loop in the next year or two. I think they're starting next year. They just have to close a funding gap and we'll bring it into the loop system. Following that, they're actually going to then extend it south to Valencia Road, where there currently isn't a facility, and we will accommodate that with the bridge by allowing that grade separation of the loop and Drexel Bridge. On the West Bank, where the loop currently exists, we will be grade separating the loop from the bridge so that users of it won't be in conflict with traffic. Other than that, I think those are the main components that we'll be talking about, kind of design elements. We've also got some improvements at the intersections I can chat about. So talking about the cross section, we had a bit of discussion around that on Fifth Street. We are looking at, as I mentioned, on the bridge itself, two 12-foot multi-use paths to accommodate bicyclists and pedestrians, kind of like we have currently on many areas of, say, the loop or a lot of our shared use paths. A 6-foot shoulder, two 10-foot travel lanes, and 11-foot two-way left turn lane. So again, those are kind of our efforts to make sure that we're building at that neighborhood scale, we're keeping traffic slow, and we're accommodating all users, and we're accommodating the users who are likely to use this facility, knowing that we're going to have a mix of recreational and active mode trip purposes that are, you know, using that are for destinations. That was the clumsiest way to possibly say that, but you know what I'm getting at. We've also been looking at the traffic projections, and this is what's driving a little bit of our push to have the traffic signals. But currently in a lot of these areas, because it's functionally a cul-de-sac, you know, we've got traffic volumes that are going to be in the hundreds. With the opening of this bridge and really kind of what the value proposition of the bridge is, on opening year, we're looking to generate or shift probably about 10,000 vehicles a day, which currently isn't operating on Drexel Road because it's not connecting to anything. And a lot of this is going to be that local traffic, which is now able to shift off of Irvington and Valencia onto Drexel Road. And just as a point of comparison, 10,000 vehicles per day, comparable is about what we see on Tucson Boulevard or Mountain Avenue today, just as a means of kind of that context. But because of that major shift or change in how this segment of roadway in particular operates, we've been making additional efforts to work with some of these neighbors for more direct outreach, just to see how we can kind of minimize or mitigate some of the impacts of this new structure, because it is going to be a significant change to how they experience their neighborhood. And then, as I mentioned, as a result of that increased traffic volume, and really probably in some instances necessary today, we will be putting traffic signals in at these intersections. We're anticipating federalizing the project. I won't get too much into this, but as part of this effort and in order to support accessing federal funds, we'll be doing a pretty extensive environmental process to see how it impacts the Santa Cruz River, some of the wildlife or biological resources and cultural resources that are located in the river. Won't get too much into this. I think we talked a bit about this, but the big takeaway here is, again, we'll be accommodating at the highest degree of comfort and safety and consistent with the street design guide accommodations for bicyclists and pedestrians. It will also really improve SunTrans service, and that currently SunTrans service is coming down Drexel, is taking this left on Calle Santa Cruz, continue on to Valencia Road, coming back around and coming back up on the other side, essentially. It's happening in Cardinal, not here, but now they'll be able to come straight across this bridge and provide more direct service and more reliable, convenient service for residents. And then finally, here is just kind of the layout of the bridge. I can bring this back up when we get into discussion, but this is kind of the current configuration we're looking at. The only thing that's different that we're proposing than what you have seen on the interactive map is we are evaluating some additional medians in the bridge, particularly west on the West Bank, to discourage or prevent people from passing in the center turn lane. So if we bring in those medians, they can provide a pedestrian refuge, but also not allow vehicles to pass people in front of them. When you have a three-lane roadway, there can be a temptation to do that if the driver at the front of the queue is moving slower than the person behind them wants to go. With regard to funding, we are anticipating this to be about a $39 million project. This is one of our challenges that we're confronting and something we're looking to address. We have about $19 million in hand. We were the recipients of a state of Arizona legislative appropriation in the last legislative session. The state of Arizona decided to set aside $15 million specifically for the benefit of this project. We also have development impact fees and local gas tax that are coming to it, but it's about $19 million. So that leaves us a $20 million gap that we need to close. And that is where we are going to the U.S. Department of Transportation with a great concept. I think something that's going to be transformative and hat in hand, begging for them to award this $20 million. So we've applied for a RAISE grant, which I think at the last meeting, Jonathan talked about that the county was a recipient of for Valencia Road. It's part of the bipartisan infrastructure legislation and the additional federal funding that's out there for transportation. But we'll be looking to close that funding gap of that $20 million to be able to move forward on our idealized timeline. This, the announcement for that will be in June of this year. So until that time, we don't really know if we've been successful in closing that funding gap. And as I mentioned, this is one of the first projects, or the first project, where we're using our Complete Streets checklist as part of the street design guide. I sent that out in advance, so hopefully you had an opportunity to take that and digest it a little bit. But I just wanted to point out some of the elements that would demonstrate compliance with the street design guide, including the 10-foot travel lanes, the 6-foot sidewalks offset from the roadway, protected bike lanes, the bi-directional shared use paths, continuous street lighting. We'll be looking to reduce the curb returns at the intersections to slow vehicles down and to reduce some of the conflicts with bicyclists and pedestrians. Grade separated connections to the loop. And we will be designing this at 30 miles per hour. So looking to reduce the travel speeds on it and the narrower lanes, the medians, all those elements are going to help us kind of bring that travel speed down of the users. It's a lot of information, but with that, I can open it up for any questions. I'd be happy to bring up any of the design concepts if we want to look at that together, or we can just kind of open the floor.
Thanks, Patrick. Comments, questions?
I would also have, we have this interactive map. So if anybody goes to the Drexel Bridge website, you can see people have already started commenting on it. I would encourage you to go in there and add your comments directly to the project website.
Good point. Okay, Jonathan, then Ruth.
Patrick, I haven't looked on the website, so I apologize. But could you just go back to the, one of the earlier slides that showed the where the connections to the loop interact with the roadway?
Yeah.
Zoom.
Is my screen sharing the interactive map, or are you seeing anything at all?
Thank you for your time.
Yeah, it's showing not presentation view, but
yeah, I'll bring up the interactive map. I think that would be more useful.
Okay. Yeah. The only thing I was trying to figure out is there potentially some conflicts between bikes and peds at the crosswalk location shown there? Like, are bicyclists potentially coming from the north, getting off of the loop, turning right and heading west on Drexel, and then deciding to go across the street at the crosswalk? Because, like, you got so many options here. It's a free-for-all here. There's so many choices. I'm just looking at what the options are and if there's some potential conflicts there. But
They could be coming here. They could be coming here. They could go under and come back around this way. You could have people coming through here or getting onto the path.
Yeah. And then do you have two-way multi-use paths extending west of this location, west of the crosswalks also?
No, it drops at the crosswalk at Mahan, so that's where we're transition into the directional
standard
facility,
okay.
You know, which we're proposing as protected.
Okay. All right, cool. That's all I had. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan.
Yep.
Ruth and Miranda.
This might be a naive question, not being an engineer, but why do you have a center left turn lane on a bridge?
Yeah, Ted, you want to handle that one?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's going to match the center turn lane, both north, east and west of the bridge. And as you come off of, like, if you're in this view, you're heading east, it just naturally lines up with that left turn lane. On the other end of the bridge, you can go over there. We do want to be able to get in and turn left into Mahan Drive.
Oh, so there is actually a left turn off a bridge?
Well, you're already off the bridge at that point.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yep.
So technically, there's no place to go until the bridge is over.
Right. Yep.
Okay.
It's more to have that continuity in the tie-in. And I think one of the benefits, too, is in the event that, say, there's a road closure on Valencia, there's a crash or something, it allows vehicles on that left turn to stack back further onto the bridge as well to queue for that northbound left turn.
Okay. And then one other question, the RTA project, the Drexel Road project, is that west or east of this bridge?
So this, we actually submitted this to the RTA. This is our highest priority project that we submitted for our RTA next, but we're trying to get out in front of that and pursue federal funding. If we're successful in securing the federal funds, then we'll take this off of the RTA next list. However, this is a part of a broader corridor concept. So that's a really good distinction and great question. So we're actually looking to improve all of Drexel Road from Mission all the way to Country Club. And we're kind of seeing this as the keystone piece of it because it doesn't make as much sense for us unless we're creating that continuity. Interestingly, we do have an opportunity to do some improvements over here because this is on our collector list that you all took a look at as well as the IOAC. We've got this 5-lane section that will be repaved as part of the collector list. So we can look at bringing that continuity into what we're proposing with this project as well. So there's been a lot of concerns and concerns issued by the neighborhood because Grijalva Elementary School is right over here on Drexel. We currently have a 5-lane section, so worried that there's going to be generating a lot of additional traffic, especially with that 5-lane. So I think as part of that repaving work, we'll also look at potentially adding safety improvements here, slowing down traffic and seeing what's viable in terms of traffic calming and potentially a road reconfiguration or road diet through there.
Okay. And the other one point is when I was working for PAG, I made a call on a call center that was right near the Desert View campus. And they were telling me that people were taking the bus and walking across that. To get to that place of business. And so, yeah, this will be a great addition.
Yeah, so I think that's probably this facility. And Miranda. This is actually operating as Casa Elitis right now. So this is where a lot of asylum seekers.
I'm interested in how using the design checklist went, like if it was easy to use, if it, just kind of like.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I felt that the checklist was it wasn't too cumbersome and it asked the right questions and so I didn't have any issue with it.
Sophia?
Yes, I think it's always discouraging when there's investment for cars to have an easier time to get around, and we're having to come up with solutions in order to prevent a situation or in order to like improve a situation that we're talking about building. Another question I had, that's just a comment. And a question I had was with the medians that could potentially go in that center turn lane, is there an option for speed bumps on Drexel, just in front of that, between Midvale and then where the bridge touches the other side?
Yeah, sorry, I dropped out for a second, but I'm back. I can answer that. So thank you, Sophia. Great question. We've actually been starting to potentially explore that. So if we want to transition into this neighborhood context, it might be an opportunity to look at speed tables in this area. So we'd have the medians, and we could also have that speed table, because we've gotten reports that there's already currently drag racing happening on this stretch of Drexel. So I think a speed table is one of the most direct ways you can prevent that activity. But we would want to make sure that we're talking to SunTran about that with the rerouting of the buses. There's also a fire station just to the west over here. So it's always going to be a discussion with Tucson Fire Department to see how that would impact response times. But absolutely, we'll take that comment, and it's I think it's good to explore, particularly here in front of the elementary school, which is outside of our project, but on our radar.
Very good. Any other questions or comments? Okay, and any kind of just concluding comments, Patrick, about next steps, timing?
Yeah, so we're going to have, and Ted, correct me if I'm wrong, we're going to have the final DCR, or design concept report, out in the next week or so. So that we're going to do some internal. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's the draft DCR. Yeah.
The draft DCR, yeah.
Yep. It'll be finalized several months from now.
Yeah.
Yep.
We'll start with our internal reviews at the city, at staff. I appreciate that clarification.
Yeah.
And in the next couple of months, we'll make sure we get all that posted to the website. In the meantime, I would encourage all of you, if you're interested in the project, to use the website. That's why we set this interactive map up for. We're taking comments. You can see people have already started to participate in this, so that will stay up, and we would encourage you to use it.
Great. All right, so we're right on time for our next topic, pedestrian safety letter review and approval. Miranda.
Thank you. I don't know if we want to like share a screen to show everybody the letter, but essentially what it is that I've drafted a letter. This comes from a discussion that we had about issuing a statement as the CSCC to Marin Council about traffic violence and pedestrian deaths and fatalities and injuries. And just like injecting, I think in the hopes of injecting.
Uh-oh.
Tension. Am I still here?
Injecting, and then you froze.
I'm going to turn off my camera. It might help my connectivity issues. Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, just injecting more urgency into the situation, hopefully spurring more action and focus. It was kind of spurred by a newspaper article, but honestly, you can just Google any day of the week, Tucson pedestrian, and you'll come up with like very fresh incidents. And so it's just like a problem that is continuing to not get better. So I drafted a letter, and I'm just looking for feedback.
So why don't you your screen? That's probably easiest.
Okay. Yeah. Let me find it. Sorry, I should have had that ready. 1 second. So yeah, I just took a stab at it. I'm definitely open to any feedback from anybody.
Larger. Try to fill out your screen if at all possible. Unless people can read.
How's that?
Yeah. So everybody just take a look at it and then raise your hand if you have comments. So raise your hands as you have comments about you like it as is, you have questions, thoughts. Is there anything below that?
Yeah, I was going to ask if I needed to scroll down, but that's kind of most of it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Sophie.
Just to start, well, I think this is great. And then I'm wondering if we can make the thank you shorter, and then you can reference, you can maybe stop at for all period and then jump into the concerns that we have. And then you can always, you know, add back, for example, you know, so thanks. Tucson's pedestrians are in danger, putting the demand for the public for some action, and then saying, as you did with these projects, or as you considered with these projects.
I like that. I think you can tell I'm trying to like sandwich my criticism, you know? okay, so thank you for your continued work to make Tucson streets safer for all, just like period, or like add a little bit more?
For now, and then just to move it. I feel like we're not, I think this is more conceptual. I don't know if you, I don't think we're going to walk away with like a polished draft at the end of this.
No, we only have 10 minutes.
Yeah. So I'm just thinking
feedback, and then I'll probably incorporate it and share another draft.
Yeah. I think that's great.
Cool. Cool. So I can tinker with this and just make this a little shorter. Just say something more streamlined. That's like the same kind of thing.
Yeah. And you can just like move that yellow paragraph to the bottom.
Oh, you want me to put it at the end?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I was like, we don't have to put it at all if you don't want to. It's a little fluffy. But what do you think of this as the last part? Well, I'll just put it at the end and kind of play with it later. Yeah, I'm welcoming of any feedback anybody has.
James?
Yeah, thank you. I guess I had more of a conceptual question, not knowing anything about this letter, just jumping in now. I'm a little confused of what we are asking for. Like in the ideal world, what action would be taken to address this? So I don't know if maybe this is too high level.
It's a good question for sure. I think that where my mind is going is just like wanting them to focus more on, there's existing guidance that mayor and council could act upon right now. For example, the pedestrian action safety plan, like that already exists and has very clear recommendations about how to make the situation safer for pedestrians. But of course, like there's a lot that they all have to deal with. And so I think just getting it onto their radar, like, for example, when it comes to housing, you know, the community has been pretty outspoken about wanting action on the housing crisis. And now mayor and council has like a standing item on their study session where they report out on very specific things that they are doing to address that. And so I think I'm just looking for a similar focus and maybe like helping. I see us as working in collaboration with council members and by being sort of a conduit for the community, since we're a commission. And so it's like, we're also showing like where the priorities should be, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm wondering now, just thinking out loud, if there's some like easy lower hanging fruit way that they could take an action just to like get them going. Like, for example, you could do this on this street. Just to make them say something about a point. So what I heard you say, perhaps a misunderstanding, is we've already agreed upon and outlined these standards in Complete Streets and Move Tucson in all these places, but we want to actually now do it. And maybe there's a low-hanging fruit example of, I don't know, something. Yeah, just thinking out loud. Thank you, though.
No, yeah, I was going in a similar, I was thinking about that as I was writing it. I just wasn't coming up with like a sort of like smaller thing other, but I think it's a really good comment. I appreciate that. And I think if there's like a thing, I'd be interested in hearing suggestions from the council.
Other comments or thoughts, suggestions?
I'm reading through the chat, and I mean, maybe adding Vision Zero to the agenda is a good idea, Sophia. I really do think that that's a great place to start.
Ariel.
Yeah, I agree. I think you could frame the Vision Zero sentence a little more strongly that, you know, Vision Zero exists and we think that the city should do X, Y, and Z aligned with it. And then, you know, maybe I don't know how realistic or practical this is or if it's a good idea at all, but if we wanted to have a specific ask in addition to maybe adopting the Vision Zero framework, maybe it could just be that we want to hear from them what their plan is for how they're going to prioritize pedestrian safety and reducing traffic violence.
Other comments? And how about specific other planning efforts going on or other efforts that are relevant to this in the county, perhaps?
I was going to say the other thing is if anybody in this meeting wants like the edit link or to like help with this, like I'm totally open to that because this was really just a first pass on my part before I hit a wall.
It's very well written, Miranda. Other
I
improvements?
see Evren's hand, but are
Evren,
you waiting?
your hand is lost in your light yellow background.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, since I'm not a member, take it all with a huge grain of salt, please. But Miranda, it's a great letter. I just wondered, like, I think the fact that you're highlighting pedestrian fatalities is really important. We are the 13th most dangerous region for walking, and I think that deserves like being on the spotlight. But I'm just wondering if there might be any benefits, sort of like adding something there, maybe a couple of sentences also highlighting that like our traffic fatalities have increased, like the trends over time has led to a place where we are seeing more fatalities overall. And just to like I guess highlight that this issue goes beyond pedestrian safety and like we have a major traffic safety crisis on our roadways for everybody. And I'm just adding this as a way to sort of like I guess make the issue greater than something that just impacts pedestrians, but really anybody traveling on our streets right now. We're taking huge risks.
I really appreciate those comments. Are you able to send any information or stats my way, Evren, that I could insert?
Yeah, I can send you the data based, I mean, like we've been tracking since 2017. I bet Patrick could also might also have access to even more verified data than what I have in my hands, but happy to send it. And I imagine there could be support there too, pulling in some stats, trends over time. Yeah, let's chat about that offline.
Thank you so much.
Sophia added pedestrians, car users, bicycle riders. Other comments? Okay, so next steps on this, if we need full consensus on all on the wording, it can't get sent till after the next meeting. Or we could look at consensus on the main intent, like how this letter is written with a few additional, you know, statistics, language tweaks, that kind of thing. What do you think, Miranda?
I'm up for whatever the group, you know, whatever the consensus is leaning, but I'm happy to incorporate any feedback I receive. and then like share out another draft.
Yeah, Tani, before anything would be sent to council, I think it would make sense to have a final draft approved and voted up by the entire body instead of kind of the spirit and intent of it.
No, that's probably true. Okay, so any other comments on the letter?
Well, and I think people can email comments too after if like you need some time to digest or whatever.
So are you sending, did you send the letter to the council or should Patrick?
It went out with the agenda.
Oh, okay, good.
Any comments should come directly to me just so we're not having digital communication amongst the members and potentially creating a quorum issue. So if you have comments, please send them to me and I'll share them with Miranda directly.
And then Miranda will send a new and improved version back to Patrick, who will then send it out to you and we'll put it on the next agenda. And hopefully at that point, it'll be a final draft for review and approval.
Sounds good to me. I really appreciate everybody's comments a lot.
And thank you for taking the initiative, Miranda. Okay, the last topic is the CSCC Hub.
Just really quickly before we leave that, Tani, sorry, I did want to mention that there is an ongoing initiative jointly between the City of Tucson, Pima County, some of the other jurisdictions. We were the recipients of the SS4A Safe Streets for All grant from the federal government. We're beginning a comprehensive planning initiative work and currently in scope negotiation with the consultant. But part of an outgrowth of that effort is going to have to be a commitment by regional leadership, each of the partnering entities' jurisdictions, of a toward zero death goal for roadway safety, which is the terminology that the FHWA USDOT uses. Same concept as Vision Zero.
So it might be useful to reference that and have something even more concrete related to that process.
Because council had discussed a Vision Zero commitment, I want to say last year, but decided to defer that until this SS4A planning effort was concluded and we kind of went through that process.
Excellent. Thank you, Patrick. All right. CSCC Hub. So so let's start out. I guess we have all of our people. So this is really connecting again with the, oh no, we don't, Tariq, connecting with the committees, the commissions that are relevant to CSCC, because this is kind of a hub, and with very brief reports on anything of relevance, as well as if there's any questions for CSCC to take back to the respective commission. So Independent Oversight and Accountability Commission, Jim.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak this evening. The IOAC met on Monday evening. At that point, they took reports on the Prop 101, Prop 411, collector streets, and coordination between Tucson Water and the City of Tucson on our Tucson Department of Transportation and Mobility on our road programs. Very quickly, the revenue to date on Prop 411, in terms of collections, sales taxes are over $128 million after you add in costs and earnings. We're standing right now at about $133 million of a fund balance or funds collected. We now have over $68.3 million of the Better Streets funding committed to projects that are underway or complete. We are 93% through the initial project list and working on the projects in phase one. Additionally, we have now Old Spanish Trail complete. Tucson Boulevard will start next month. And we have issued a notice to proceed and are working on Star Pass. So that's where we stand right now. And we await hearing back from you all as to your priorities on the remaining collector streets so that we can begin work on that. And I did it in a minute and a half, so I'm under my 2 minutes.
Thanks, Jim. Any comments or questions for Jim?
Yeah, Jim, can you just drop the numbers in the chat like very briefly? It's hard for me to catch them.
Fair enough. Will do.
Very good. Park Tucson, Jill.
Hello, I have no relevant update.
Okay, then. In other words, you haven't met.
We did meet, but it was a super quick meeting. We met yesterday, and the new administrator, he just kind of went over some training that they'd done around safety.
Okay.
So, I mean, safety for like the enforcement people when they have issues, then that was kind of it. And the financials, which are kind of the same.
Okay, thanks. Pedestrian Advisory Committee, is anyone else here from that committee since Tariq is not? And I believe we're reaching out to Tariq separately about his participation.
Yeah, and the PAC hasn't met in maybe 3 years, 4 years. So they're dormant. There'll be no updates.
Okay. Tucson Transit Advisory Committee, Riley.
I don't have anything to update really on. We did meet, but I don't know that there's anything very compelling to share today. Thanks. Okay.
And James, Bicycle Advisory Committee.
Yeah, thank you. Might take me a few meetings to learn what is and is not relevant or what you guys want to hear, but I can paint a picture of sort of broad strokes what we've been doing. We meet every month, the Wednesday before this Wednesday is how I think about it in my head. We are in contact and have been in conversation with TPD about trying to talk to them about how they report on stories that concern pedestrian fatalities and injuries in general. Obviously, it's the reporters that do the reporting, but a lot of times the reporters talk to the police, and so we've been talking to TPD, and they've been very receptive about being very particular in the words we choose. Unfortunately, the sheriff's office has not been really attending, so it's been harder to reach out and with the same kind of thing with regards to them. There's also broad strokes, an effort to improve bike lanes that connect the south side to the east side of Tucson. Specifically, if you're going down Alvernon, it gets awkward as you go over 29th Street and Palo Verde and that kind of region. We received a letter back from Pima County Transportation that said they're very willing to work with us. We also have another effort in Oro Valley on Overton Road to connect Thornydale and I forgot what the other street is, but if anyone wants details on that kind of thing, please reach out. And I can't think of anything else right now.
All right, that sounds great. Perfect. Miranda? Oh, you've got a thumbs up. Any comments or questions from any of you? Okay, last is Commission on Disability Issues. Zach. Is Zach here? No. All right. So moving into the wrap-up, future agenda items, we will start with DTM staff and project updates.
Yeah, I got a bit of a list to update tonight. I'll try to move through this briefly. So if you haven't seen it, we are now beginning a transition to full protected phasing at a number of our left turns around the city. So typically, historically in the city of Tucson, we've operated permissive lefts, which means you get that flashing yellow or you can make a left turn on a green ball right through an intersection. We're starting that transition where we have dual left turns. So everything will be full protected, meaning you'll have to wait until you get the green arrow to make a left turn. So that's been rolling out at a number of intersections. If you've seen it, I think we'll be having some social media presence on that. It will be from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Exclusively. But this is going to be a major safety improvement at intersections at the expense of kind of capacity of the intersections. But I think it's a demonstration of putting that safety first perspective. As we're kind of moving in that direction. Grant Road groundbreaking for Grant 3-4 was yesterday. So that project from Alvernon to Swan winding to six lanes RTA project will start in earnest. So that one is moving. I believe it's about an 18-month to 24-month construction schedule. So if you see closures on Grant Road, that is what's happening. In terms of the work of this committee, HDR is starting the cost estimates and developing concepts for the 16 collector streets where we're looking at opportunities to layer projects. So these are the ones that we reviewed in the spring, IOAC approved. Now we're looking at where the opportunities are for sidewalks, lighting, restriping, et cetera. We should be seeing the results of that in probably 4 to 6 weeks, and we'll be bringing it back to the committee. And then we'll start to identify which of those will be funding through the 411 safety plan under the Collector Street program. So that will be moving. In terms of the revenue, we have collected $25.6 million in the Safe Streets Fund. So we'll just keep it to that for right now. We're on track for about $1.3 million per month collected under that program, which puts us at about $16 million for this year projected. At $16 million, that is about a million ahead of what we were building the initial safety plan around. So we're coming in a little bit higher than we were anticipating. So it should create some additional capacity, which will probably get eaten up by escalating costs. So it might be a wash, but we are coming in above expectation, which is great. In terms of the safety numbers that have come in, we have seen 39 traffic fatalities to date this year. So I think that's relevant to the discussion you were just having. That is, an increase over last year, where we had seen 30 roadway fatalities at this date last year. So we continue to see that increase, even though last year was a marked increase over the previous year. So it continues to go up really in that post-COVID landscape. 20 of those were vulnerable road users or bikes and pedestrians. There were 17 pedestrian fatalities and 3 bicyclist fatalities in the city of Tucson. And again, this is an increase from 13 over last year to date. So it continues to be a concerning trend. And I think it's something we all want to address. And we're looking at those opportunities for these investments through 411, through the safety planning, through the work of this committee. So thank you for continuing to be committed to that and bringing attention to it. I think it's critically important. In terms of projects, Greasewood is done. So that was funded by the CSCC. We have fully installed those sidewalks from Ironwood Hills to Speedways, made that final connection, and the repaving is completed as well. We have also now completed the shared use path that was rehabbed on the side of Old Spanish Trail using those 411 safety funds. So those projects are now concluded. So thank you very much for your commitment and allowing those projects to move forward. Tucson Boulevard Collector Street Program should be moving soon. We've got somebody under contract to begin that repaving, and we're looking at some restriping opportunities as part of that repaving from 6th Avenue to 22nd Street. There are some sidewalk gaps on that we do want to take care of, but that's probably going to have to move as a separate project. And finally, PEMA Association of Governments, as of yesterday, has kicked off their active transportation plan. So they will be looking regionally at kind of our needs for bikes and pedestrians, and there might be an opportunity for this committee to participate or get involved in that. We can potentially get a future speaker or discussion, but wanted to make you aware that that effort was happening at the regional level. And with that, one final announcement. I will let you know that this is going to be my final meeting liaising to the Complete Streets Coordinating Council. And I wouldn't be me if I didn't go out without word salad. So I will be stepping back from this role. Ryan Fagan, who is on the commission, will be stepping up. I will still be here and I plan on attending the sessions, but he will be your primary point of contact. You can always reach out to me. I'll always be here to chat through and share comments with whatever. It's been an absolute pleasure over these last years working with all of you and just to see this committee evolve and really kind of take control of this issue and take command of it and really begin to own this space in the kind of Complete Streets in Tucson. And I've loved working with all of you and it's been fantastic, and I'm bad at this. So I'm just going to step aside and let Ryan introduce himself to all of you.
Oh, Patrick, try as we might. Do people know why you're doing this? Because of your elevation and your status at DTM. He's also a bit humble.
I'm stepping aside because it will be the planning administrator, which doesn't mean anything in terms of it means something, but titles, what have you, it's bureaucracy. Basically a promotion, taking charge of the planning division within the Department of Transportation. So I appreciate the faith that the city leadership has shown in me to take that role on. And really, I'm just standing on all of your shoulders who have elevated me to that promotion. So I thank you for that.
Thank you so much. I think everybody's really appreciative. And we've heard from other commissions and others how a lot of people look up to this commission, and you are a really key part of that, Patrick. So hard shoes to fill, Ryan. But go ahead, and why don't you have a few words?
All right, thank you. I really just want to say I'm really looking forward to getting to know you all better and working with you all on making our streets better and safer. I know Patrick has done a ton of work from the very beginning, so I have some really huge shoes to fill. And I know you all have been a huge part of so many things like Move Tucson and the Street Design Guide and so many other things. So I'm just really excited to get started and hopefully do this role justice. But just a little bit about me. I have been with the city for almost just in a week after next, it'll have been 5 years. So almost as long as Patrick. I've been a project manager and will continue to be a project manager. I've mainly been working on Proposition 407 funded bicycle and pedestrian improvement projects. I'll be transitioning to managing some other types of projects as well. But also, yeah, taking on this role and working with you all. And I'm just real excited to do that. And then, should I give a few project updates as well, Patrick, or just?
I think we're getting close to the end of it, but I just do want to say, big welcome to Ryan. He's going to be fantastic. It has, in many ways, really been the heart and soul of this program in a lot of our implementation and execution of the project. So he's going to be a great Complete Streets program coordinator, and I'm so excited to be able to kind of pass the baton to him. And I think you guys will have a great working relationship. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, thank you so much, Ryan.
Thank you all.
Working with you on this. All right. So, in the interest of that, we're out of time. Any updates you have, you can do next month, Ryan. We do have a link. Colleen will put in the chat. Usually, we at the end of every meeting asked if there's any agenda items you think should be on an upcoming meeting. So, we made this document. You could add comments into it if you have thoughts. And Sophia, unfortunately, we did not get to the personal experience, which we set up co-chairs and all of us to be each month where you would go out on your own time and see a complete street design feature, or in this case, take a bus ride. So we'll just roll this one assignment over for next time. So, we've already explained it, but we'll make sure we have a few minutes to chat about it next meeting. And thank you all. Enjoy the rest of your week and month. See you soon.
Thank you, Patrick, especially. We'll miss you.
Thanks,
See you
Ryan.
around. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.